Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome to yet another episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is the booth where you can drop your problems, questions, confusions, dilemmas, and we come up with answers to them. And as I always say on this show, the answers are only pointers. And what do they point to? They point to the answers that will have to come from within you. By the way, this is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai and your co-explorer in this quest for better understanding of Swami's message. So let us begin this week's show by together offering our loving and humble pranams to Swami. As always, I have an interesting question this week, and it is going to give me the opportunity to speak about an important aspect of Swami's message and something we tend to misunderstand. But before that, you know what I'm going to say. It's the time for the quote of the week. Well, if you guessed that, then here's a little surprise for you. Today, I'm not going to be starting with a quote. Instead, we are going to begin with the question straight away. And after I complete the answer, I'm hoping to read out an article for all of you. What's important is not the article itself, but a few letters that feature in that article. These are letters written by Swami himself to his students over the years. But more importantly, these are letters that brought with them New Year blessings and New Year messages. I thought it would be nice to end the episode with those words. This is the last episode of the year 2017. So do stay tuned. Those letters are very, very precious. Well, they are letters written by Swami. Need I say more? The question we'll be dealing with today is from one of our regular listeners and someone who has sent us questions earlier too. The question is from Sister Purna Janikraman from Sharjah. Our volunteer Sister Sumana will be reading out the question for us. Let's listen to the question and let's see what answer we can come up with.
Sai Ram brother, I have a question. At times, we have a lot of things that have to be done. But our body has certain limitations and we are not able to accomplish all those things. Though we know that God is the doer, don't we fail in our effort when we are not able to do what we wish to? How do we come out of this body limitation? Though we remind ourselves that we are not the body, sometimes we are compelled by our body to limit ourselves, though our intention is to do our best. In such a situation, I get upset and angry and feel I have not done my duty. How to overcome this?
Thank you, sister, for that question. I think the question is primarily about when the ailments or lack of good health limit us. And especially when we have duties to do and duties to perform, if the ailments and the lack of health in our body limit us, and that leads to frustration. So what do we do in such situations? And of course, there is also a mention about God being the doer. So probably I'll start with first explaining that and getting that out of the way literally. Because when we talk about the limitations of the body, we are talking about the body. And God being the doer is a more fundamental truth. And bringing both together, the idea of the body and our limitations as a person living in this body, and the idea that God is the doer, I think these two are can be a little confusing when spoken of together. So probably we'll explain about the idea of doership, of God being the doer. I've had this opportunity to speak about it in length, I think, in one of the answers that I'd given. But probably to give you briefly, as Swami would beautifully say, God is like the electricity that flows through different bulbs. And depending on the wattage and the color of the bulb, the electricity that flows through these bulbs expresses itself differently. So, yes, we all must strive for that understanding and eventually try to relate, you know, to that idea that, as Swami would say, that now you think that you're the bulb, but the understanding and the maturity that you have to develop into is the idea that you're not the bulb, but that you're the energy or the electricity that enlightens the bulb, right? And that's what it is when we speak of giving up body consciousness, I'm sorry, and developing atmic consciousness. You get over the idea that you are the limited bulb and you are the energy that that illumines this body or this bulb, right? When that happens, we begin to stop identifying with the body and the limitations of the body, and also the achievements and the abilities of the body, right? Not only do you detach yourself from the limitations of the body, but you start disowning even what the body achieves in the form of achievements, in the form of talents, in the form of whatever good it does too. So for now, we'll just look at it as, you know, I want to do something, which is my duty or my dharma, and the health limitations in the body are preventing me from doing that or are inhibiting me from doing it to the best of my intentions. And that inability to perform my duty to my satisfaction is leading me to become restless and frustrated. So we'll deal only with that part of the question, because I think that itself is a very, very important thing that has been asked. And since I've received many questions from this particular listener many times before, I can kind of sense from where this question is coming. I know that she's a very dutiful mother. And so I'm going to take the liberty of answering this question in the background of this question coming from a mother of a house, the mother who is having to take care of children, you know, teenage children. So I'm going to take the liberty of speaking of this or replying to this question with that as the background, because I feel that's a very, very important thing. I'm going to be addressing many of the mothers who probably might be listening to this either live or downloading it later and listening, because it's a very important thing that we generally tend to miss out or misunderstand. To start with, the statement I would like to make is not caring for the body or to neglect one's health or the rightful needs of the body. As Swami would say, the body has its own needs. Only when it goes beyond the limits, it's wrong. But the body does have some legitimate rightful needs. So not caring for the body and neglecting the health and the rightful needs of the body is not a spiritual idea. Spirituality is not about neglecting the body at all. And especially mothers of the houses, ladies of the house must keep this in mind. And I'll explain why I'm saying this, because it's something which is very important, especially for people who play these roles. I'm not saying that, you know, you should start thinking about yourselves and, you know, your needs should be given importance. Because that's one argument which is going around now, that women should think about themselves more and give themselves more space. I mean, and I think that comes from a different kind of thinking. I'm not talking about that. But you should take care of your physical body just like you take care of the physical bodies of everybody else in your family. That's all I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, that you should not neglect your health and neglect your needs of the body. Because just like how being the lady of the house, you tend to care for the health of those in your family, the health of the elders in your family, the health of your husband and your children, the same way you will also have to treat your body as another person in the family that you're taking care of and take good care of it. I think this is something which many times you see, mothers miss out on. So I think that is what I wanted to make. So they should not start thinking more about themselves, but start treating their own body as another member in the family that they have to take care of. I want to talk about the observation that I've made. This is not absolute and not comprehensive in that sense, but it's just a pointer. Probably if you observe your own self, observe the people around you, observe families that you know, you might concur with what I'm saying. When you talk about a family, a mother and father coming together, one thing which is noticeable is the quality that the mother very naturally brings to the family, or the mother very naturally expresses, is the idea of selflessness. For a mother to be selfless, it's, I think, almost like second nature. It's very obviously and very easily comes for the mother. But if you look at the father, the virtue or the value or the quality that the father brings into the family, or by virtue of being the father, the quality which is very spontaneous for that individual, I feel is the idea of detachment. The ability to do one's duty and not be attached to the results of the duty that has been performed. I'll try to explain both of these qualities and why I'm saying this in a short while. But both of these qualities, the idea of selflessness and the idea of detachment, is very, very important, and literally like two sides of the coin when we talk about the spiritual path. So both of these are very equally important. And when you look at it, a mother very, very spontaneously and readily develops the idea of selflessness. The father very readily brings this quality of detachment when he is coming to, when he's dealing with the family. If one is selfless in action, but then gets attached to, what he is doing or what she is doing or the results of what is being done, I think that is very bad, right? That is not the idea of a spiritual approach to life. So if you're selfless and you get attached to what you've done, then it's bad. Similarly, if one is detached when it comes to the needs of others and selfish, then again, that is also not the right thing. I mean, that's not called detachment at all. You're just being indifferent to the needs of others. So both of these qualities are important, and maybe in the absence of the other, selflessness in the absence of detachment can become bad, and detachment in the absence of selflessness or in the absence of love itself, selfless love is what I mean. Even in that case, it can actually deteriorate to something which is more detrimental to one's spiritual progress. So in general, I feel the mothers in the family should work on their detachment, and I'll explain what that is. And the fathers in the family should work on their selfless love. Again, I'll explain what that is. It's not just about, I'm not saying that the fathers don't have love or the mothers don't have detachment. Please don't take me wrong. That's why I'm saying that this is not an observation which is absolute and this is applying to everybody. But you will observe when you look at people, when you look at couples, that these are qualities which come very naturally. And I think that's what brings a balance into the family. And that is a very useful combination when it comes to parenting itself. So when I say that fathers are not selfless, what do I really mean by that? I'm not saying that they lack selflessness or they're very, very selfish. I'm talking of it in a very comparative sense. When you look at how a mother deals with a family, you can see that a mother is much, much more selfless. And, the father of the house always expects that respect should be given to him, that his word needs to be taken seriously. And, all of these qualities actually are a sense of selfishness. You need your space. You need that respect within the family. But you would see a mother can give up that much, much more easily when compared to a father. And that's why I'm saying comparatively a father needs to work on this idea of selflessness, right? So that way, he ensures that he brings this quality of detachment, but the quality of detachment is what makes the father's approach to parenting very, very objective. That's why a father will be able to tell that, my son is doing a mistake, my daughter is doing this mistake, and be able to punish the child with the right attitude because of this quality of detachment with which he approaches the idea of parenting itself. Whereas the mother finds it very, very difficult. The mother would find it very difficult to disown a son who is doing something wrong. As we've seen historically, many, many great individuals would disown their children when they have not done the right thing. We've got many examples. One, of course, is Mahatma Gandhi himself. But it is far more difficult for a mother to do that because there is selfless love, but there is a greater amount of attachment when compared to the father. Whereas the father is able to make more objective decisions because this quality of detachment is much, much more spontaneous in the father. And when we speak about mothers, and when I say that mothers should work on detachment, it's not that the mothers, it sounds a little paradoxical that they are selfless, but they are not detached, because it's very difficult to be selfless if you have attachments. But when I'm talking about attachments, the specific quality that I'd like to speak about today, and which comes under the idea of attachment, is this. Only when you very, very strongly believe that this is my body, this body is my body, and that is my children, and that is my husband, and that is the rest of the family, only when you have the strong feeling that this is my body, you will tend to overlook the needs of your body, right? That is when selflessness actually gets a little contorted. In the name of selflessness, you end up overlooking the needs of your body. You end up self-abnegating. You end up misusing, literally, in the worst sense, the health of your body. This happens because of the strong feeling that this body is mine and the rest of it belongs to my family and that needs to be taken care of. It's all right if this body is not taken care of. And that comes out of attachment. Only when you believe that this is my body, that body attachment is what leads you to not taking proper or good care of your own health. So I think all mothers should keep this in mind, that if you are all the time overlooking the needs of your body, especially the health and the nutrition needs of your body, that is not a sign of spirituality. That is not a sign which will help for a person to progress spiritually. As I've said many, many times on the show, every time a discussion on something related to family or marriage comes, I always say this, that getting into a marriage helps you go from selfishness to a certain amount of selflessness. Automatically, it gives you that opportunity to look beyond your own needs. But this is where many people get stuck. They go to that level, but you can't stop there. That's why many times when Swami speaks about family, Swami would always speak about this idea of attachment. The idea of attachment being something which becomes an obstacle in the spiritual path. And Swami would always mention that with reference to mothers and fathers, and you know how husbands get attached to wives, and we get attached to each other. It's because of this. It's a very limited form of selflessness. When you start misusing your own body, misusing your own health, neglecting your own health, and take very good care of others, it is a strong sign that you strongly believe that this is my body, right? It's a form of attachment. That's why I was saying that this is a misunderstanding that that most of us come to. If you have that detachment, how will you work? Take for example that, imagine that you have a helper at home, a servant maid or a man who's a helper at your home. I think our basic goodness will make us see how much work that person can really do. Yes, we will give him or her the work that he's supposed to do, and we will get the work done out of them. But if we have the basic good nature, I'm talking about the minimum goodness that we all are supposed to have. If we have that basic nature, let's say that person is sick today, or that person is unwell he's taken an off and he's come back or something like that. That basic goodness will stop us from making him or her do more work than probably on that day that helper can do. Right? So when we are able to have that kind of an attitude even to somebody who is working for you, definitely you're not going to allow that person to become lazy or to take salary without doing work. But when there is a need, when there is a health need for that person, you will not force your work upon that person. So same is the case with our own body. Swami says that when we start getting detached, so when we really truly get that spiritual detachment that we're all talking about, we will learn to look at our own body and say that, okay, this is like a helper, this is like a servant, right? And this needs to be taken care of. And when there is a physical need for this body, it's just like a servant who probably needs a little more rest than any other day, and I'm going to give it to them or I'm going to give it to her. Right? I think that is how eventually we will look at our body when we grow in this idea of detachment. I think so. It's a very important point that mothers and families should keep in mind, that you cannot constantly keep overlooking your own health needs in the name of selfless love. At some point when you start becoming detached, you will look at your own body and you will say that, yes, now it needs rest. Now it's unwell. I cannot tax it more. And just because it's my body, I think it's my body, it does not mean that I can push it any further. It needs rest now. I need to give it that particular due. So we must all eventually learn to treat our body with such detachment. I think that's a very, very important thing. The Swami says you have to treat it like a servant. And that is where the balance also comes. You're not going to let the body become your master. It's not that the body is going to start dictating terms to you. But at the same time, it is a servant, and that basic goodness, even when we have a helper at home, the way we will treat that person is the same way we'll need to treat our own body too. So don't listen to the body all the time, but at the same time, there should be given a little bit of consideration to the needs of the body at different times. There is this example which is often given, of course it comes in the Ramayana, of how Lakshmana served Rama for 14 years, and then eventually he kills Indrajit, the son of Ravana, who's supposed to be, some believe that he was even more invincible than Ravana himself. But there's a very important inner significance of this whole episode of Lakshmana's character, of one who has not slept and who has not They say he's not slept and eaten for 14 years. It's almost impossible for somebody to live like that. And then they say that he kills this Indrajit. The inner significance of that is very, very important. I think that's what I'd like to draw your attention to. Now, Indrajit is a character in the Ravana, in the Ramayana, who is supposed to be someone who has defeated Lord Indra, right? That's why he gets this name, Indrajit. The significance of that is Indra always represents the Indriyas. That's what the Vedas always say. Whenever the reference to Indra is made, you're talking about the Indriyas or the senses. So when we say that the Indriyas are defeated by someone, you're talking about somebody who symbolizes temptation, right? Our senses are pulled and defeated or overruled by what tempts us or what takes over us in the form of temptation. So Indrajit, this Asura prince, the son of Ravana, is supposed to represent the temptation which can defeat our senses or the Indriyas, right? So who can defeat this person? And now comes the character of Lakshmana. So when they say that Lakshmana has not eaten for 14 years, he's not eaten, he's not slept, as one of the saints puts it, it's not that he has not eaten, but Lakshmana lives life in a certain way that he does not sleep, he does not eat. He is, again, Lakshmana is supposed to represent the buddhi, right? Swami has said this many times. Lakshmana, when we look at the Ramayana which happens inside, or the Adhyatmic Ramayana, Lakshmana is supposed to represent the buddhi. So they say that Lakshmana is in that perfect state of intellect or buddhi or discrimination where he is living a life of perfect detachment, where he does not eat, he does not sleep, which means when the body needs sleep, the body sleeps. When the body needs food, it is given food. They say that he has reached that state of detachment and that state of perfect discrimination that literally he does not indulge in sleep or eating food. So when they say that this Lakshmana comes and defeats the Indrajit, the inner significance of that is when we come to that state of detachment where we are able to treat our own body as another person whom we are taking care of. That person is allowed to sleep when he needs sleep. The person is given food when that person needs food. There is no indulgence there. When a person is in that state of detachment, he can win over this embodiment of all temptations which undermine our senses. So that is the inner significance of this, and that is the most important thing that when we are looking at a spiritual life, we all have to always keep in mind that yes, we need to become selfless. As I said, all of us need to work on our selflessness. We need to work on our detachment, but detachment is not self-abnegation or overlooking the needs of the body. So does that mean that we start listening to the body? As I said, yes, the body has to be treated like a tool. The body has to be treated like a helper, but the body should not become the master. I think that is the other extreme. Most of us are guilty of indulging in that too. That when the body craves for pleasures, we give it. When the body craves for something sensual, we give it. So Swami says that is the other extreme. Don't do that. At the same time, don't start ill-treating the body too, as Swami would so beautifully tell in one of his Samukos discourses, that, you know, there is a snake inside the anthill and you want to kill the snake. What is the point in beating the anthill? Swami says the same thing the sadhakas do. You have the mind that needs to be controlled. There's only a certain extent to which what you inflict on the body will affect the mind. Beyond that, the mind is only going to react the completely opposite way when you start ill-treating the body. So there is no point in ill-treating the body when you are trying to deal with the mind. So it's very important to not go to the other extreme of making the body the master, but at the same time, it's very important to listen to the body too. It's very important because Swami would often say the body is itself an instrument of measurement. It tells you when you have overdone something. It tells you when you need to give some more to the body. As I very fondly recollect Swami telling this analogy so many times in his discourses, Swami would say even a dog when it is sick will refrain from food. You know, the dog knows that something is going wrong with its digestion. It'll know that it's not supposed to eat food which is heavy. So Swami would say it goes into the garden and it eats one particular grass because it knows that grass is, you know, good for digestion. So Swami would say even a dog knows that, but man doesn't, you know, stop to listen to the body. When the body says that this is not good for me or this is not right for me, the body, you know, that's the signal the body is giving. But we overlook that and we continue to indulge. We say, no, this is not going to affect me. I can still go and eat all of this. That's all right. And same is the case with the idea of aging. Swami says that the body gives you so many signals that you're aging. Your hair starts graying, your digestion starts slowing. Then you need to make the right kind of adjustments to your diet and to your the way you lead your life. Swami says that we don't listen to what the body is giving us as signs. We overlook it. We think that we are still young. We think that age is only in the mind. Yes, all that is very true and very important too. But Swami says you also have to listen to the body when it gives you signs. And similarly, each one of us have different needs. Each one of us have different health condition and needs. So I think especially the mothers in the houses for whom it is so very easy to become selfless and shower their love on everybody else in the family, they need to consciously develop this idea that, you know, this idea of detachment from their own bodies, that should lead to them taking good care of their health just as they take good care of everybody else in the family. I think this is a very, very important point. I know I'm not directly answering the question that is being asked, but I'm saying this because this is something that you start with. The moment you start with this detachment, the moment you try to develop this detachment, I think you'll be standing on firmer ground to look at yourself and say that, yes, this is a need that the body has. Today the body does need rest. I need to give it. Or you will be in a better place to see that, I can still push myself. You know, I'm not so sick. I can still get up from the bed and go and do what I'm supposed to do. So when you develop that detachment, I think you will be in a better position to look at yourself and say that, yes, this is a need that needs to be addressed. This is a time when the body is actually fussing, so I can overlook this. So without that, I think it's very difficult. And I think that is when you will be led to frustration when you're looking at the work that needs to be done and you're not able to push yourself to do it. And I think that's where the frustration will come. So I'm answering it in a little oblique fashion, but I think this is more universal and more important that all mothers have to keep in mind. Now, going back to that point of getting frustrated, you know, there is so much to do, there is so much you have the intention to do, but you're not able to do. Now, isn't that true for every one of us? A lot of us, for instance, every time we come up with some ideas for some projects in Radio Sai, or for that matter, anybody who's doing any kind of project, we always have some constraint or the other. And most often it's financial constraint. Most often it is manpower constraint. Yes, we would love to do a lot of things if given that ability to do whatever we want, whatever we imagine and whatever we come up with creatively, if we want to do that. But this is the situation Swami has put us in. There are limitations, and that's the challenge. And that's how that's the challenge that life throws at you. And Swami says, life is a challenge. Meet it and face the devil is what Swami says. That yes, you will have obstacles when you have something in mind to do. So you will have to find ways of addressing these issues and going forward. There's something which Swami would tell with regard to seva. I'll talk about that a little and I'll extend that analogy to the question that has been asked. When Swami had set up the different samitis, I think in the 1960s when the Satya Sai organization was slowly growing, the Balvikas program had been formalized. You had a lot of centers coming up in India, and I think towards the later part of the 60s, if I'm not wrong, the organization in America started becoming more structured. So during this time, Swami would speak a lot about seva. Swami would emphasize that people should do a lot more seva. So what was happening was many of these centers, what they would do is, because Swami wants that seva should be done, they started soliciting funds. They started going out like any other NGO. You know, they would take up a project, and then they would go to the philanthropist in their town and they say that we're doing this project, would you like to contribute? And then they would do that project with very good intentions, of course. They wanted to do something for Swami because Swami was so particular about seva. And many times Swami, when he is addressing the members of the organization, the district presidents and the state presidents, Swami would say this, you know, you've got me all wrong. This is not how I want you to work. This is not how I want my work to be done. Swami would say that, look, you have a Sai center or a Sai samiti. You have about 20 people or 25 or 20 families or whatever you all congregate and do. Swami would say, whatever is within the means of this group, Swami would say, do that much seva. I'm not bothered about the quantity of seva that is coming out of a Sai center or even of out of a state or a district. I'm only thinking that when you all come together, you all have a certain means. To start with, do within those means. Don't think up big projects and then you'll be running short of money. Then you look around and you see who's the rich person around who can probably contribute. Swami would say that that's not how I want seva to be done. 20 of you or 5 of you or even 3 or 4 of you come together. You say that this is all the money we can put together, you know, out of our ceiling of desires on desires program, or this is the money we can put aside after all our needs are met. Swami says, take that money, whatever can be done with that, you do that. Start with those pure intentions. And then Swami would say that once the intentions are pure, once you take the initiative and start doing, Swami says, it's my duty to ensure that the resources are brought to you whenever you need it. And Swami says, you just work on your intention. You only work on doing what is best within your means. Swami says, be ready to part with money and do seva. It is for the sacrifice, the attitude of sacrifice that comes with the individual. Swami did not say that you should inspire sacrifice in others by going and asking money from others. That's not the idea. Swami said, you inspire sacrifice within yourself. 5, 6, 10 of you come together and do that. And eventually, when you start doing good work, Swami says that good work will have its own momentum and it'll start going forward. And Swami says, I will ensure that the right kind of resources come to you. Otherwise, Swami, how much can you do to please Swami? Swami has built two super specialty hospitals. Does Swami expect each one of us to come up with a 100 crore hospital? I don't think so. Swami wants each one of us to do within our means. The problem with most of us is we don't even do that. And that is why Swami keeps pointing out that to us, that we are lacking that attitude of seva and selflessness. But it does not mean that each one of us should start trying to build a hospital or start trying to do a water project. If we have the means to do that, if we have the ability to do that, well, that would be amazing. But it's not expected out of each one of us. Right now, taking the same thing, the same analogy to what we were talking about our health. Yes, I think within a family, each one of us would love to do a lot of things within an organization where we are working within our, if you're working in an NGO or whatever it is, we would definitely love to do a lot more. And the intention will always be large. If you have a pure heart, why would you like to feed only 10 people? You would be very happy if you can feed 10,000 people. But I think you have to start within the limitations that you have. So in the family, if you have duties to be done, I understand where this idea is coming from, because we all know that Swami says that we need to perform our duty to perfection. Our dharma has to be dispensed as best as we can. So when limitations of the body stop us from doing that, it can be frustrating, it can be irritating. Yes, I can understand that. But I think going back to this analogy of seva that Swami was giving, we have to start doing within our means. We have to start with sincerity. We have to start by purifying our intentions. So I think we just have to start by looking at ourselves and saying that, am I by any chance being lackadaisical in my duty? By any chance am I being lazy? If the answer to that sincerely is no, I think it's fine. You're doing what is best within your limits. And constantly try to push yourself. I don't think there is reason for frustration, because that's what it is. If we all have to do as much as we intend to do, there is so much we can do. We all have limitations in our life when we want to do some things. And I think that is the beauty. And that's the challenge that Swami throws to all of us. And when we start doing that, Swami says, just like how Swami promised to the members of the organization, saying that when your intentions are pure and when you take an initiative, I will ensure that what you need comes to you. I think same is the case when it comes to our individually dispensing our duties too. When we do within our means, when we do within the boundaries of our health and our limitations, but we are doing it as sincerely as we can, we are pushing ourselves to give our best. As I said, the energy that enlightens the bulb is, after all, Swami. And really, it goes back to Swami being the doer. So when Swami is the doer, Swami can always give us that energy and that health and whatever it is required to do our duties better. I think that Swami will take care. So in everything in spirituality, it all starts with the most important investment that you can make in spirituality is honesty, self-honesty, and sincerity. So if you're looking at yourself and you're able to objectively ask yourself, am I doing the best I can? Is this really the best I can, or can I do a little more? And the answer to that is yes, you've done your best. I think there should be no reason for frustration. If something more needs to be done, if it has to be done, be sure that Swami will give you the energy and the health which is necessary for you to do it. So I think that's the answer I wanted to give Sister Purna, who asked this very beautiful question. Probably I'll quickly summarize what I was telling you. As I said, I started off by talking about doership. Let's not bring doership into this. Yes, doership is the fundamental truth. It cannot be taken away. But it is more of something which really animates us. It's without that, we can't do anything. Without that energy which flows through us, we can't do anything. So in that sense, everything is attributed to God. Even how much ever we do, whether we do it 100% or we do it 60% to 20%, whatever we do is done by Swami, and whatever we are not able to do is either a limitation of our mind or a limitation of our body, just like how different bulbs have different wattages, right? So going back to the idea of we not being able to do what we wish to do, especially when in a situation where we are supposed to dispense our duties, I spoke generally about how mothers should start developing a little more detachment to their body, because when you believe that this is my body, that's when you will start ill-treating your body or overlooking the health needs of the body. I think it's very, very important that mothers should keep this in mind, that just like how you take care of your children, just like how you take care of the elders and your husband and your family, you have to treat your own physical body as another member in the family that needs to be taken care of. That detachment has to be developed. And once you start developing that detachment, because that is also the spiritual progress that we need to take. That is the direction in which our spiritual progress has to be made. So when you start doing that, I think you'll be in a much, much more balanced situation to look at yourself and really see, is that a need or is that a greed of the body? Is the body lazy and wants to sleep more, or is the body really sick and it needs a little more rest on that particular day? And you will start treating it like a third person. That kindness and that goodness is given, and with that kindness and goodness you will treat your body like what is required. If that body needs help, needs rest, and needs medical attention, you will give it, because it's no more you. You don't look at your body as being you, and you know, I'm selfless, so I don't look at my body as having this need. But you will start looking at the body very objectively, and you will start doing what is required. And as I concluded, yes, it all starts with doing within our limitations. We all have limitations, right? And, you know, I'm sitting here, and if you look at the Radio Sai team, there's somebody who can be a very, very good singer. Somebody is there who can chant Vedam very well. Just because I can't sing or chant Vedam, it does not mean that I don't do what I can do as being a part of the team. I need to do the best within my limitations. Yes, I can't do what the others do, but I can do something, and I have to ask myself, am I doing what I can do? Am I offering the best that I can offer? I think that's what it is. Even in the family, yes, each one of us have different health limitations. And the question is, are we able to do the best within that? Are we still giving what is the best or the maximum we can give? I think the answer to that is sincerely, yes, we are. I don't think there should be any frustration. If we are doing that, if and when it is necessary that we need the energy to do something more, I think Swami will give it to us. So that's the answer I wanted to give. Sister Purna, thank you for asking this question. If there's anything more that you'd like to ask, as any clarification, I'd be happy to handle that. You can write to me again at prem@radiosai.org. As I said, listeners, I'm going to read out from an article today before we conclude today's show. I hope I'll have enough time to read out the entire thing I wish to read out today. As I said, it's an article that was published in Radio Sai a couple of years back. It was meant to be a New Year article, but what's more important in the article is in between are a few very, very beautiful letters written by Swami. And even as we bid farewell to the year 2017, I thought we will conclude with these thoughts. I hope you'll enjoy the reading. I'm going to read out from this article now. There are two times in a year each of us tend to stop and wonder at how ceaseless the flow of time is. One is our respective birthdays, and the other is the beginning of a new year. It suddenly fills us with the feeling that time is in a rush and it's leaving behind all of us. Sometimes it's a feeling of remorse for not being able to do things we intended to, or the feeling of relief that a bad year is now all but consigned to the rearview mirror of life. For teens, the joy of taking dauntless strides into adulthood, and for youth, probably, hesitant and edgy steps into midlife. Be what it may be, at some point in this journey, we do stop and muse at how unconquerable and detached time is. Time heals all pains, yet it never pauses to sympathize with any. Time can be spent in the memories of the past or in aspirations for the future, but you can never step a fraction ahead of time or overstay a moment for more than just that moment. All of us have been through those piggy bank times in our childhood. A time comes when the carefully collected pennies have to be finally spent. There's always the strong temptation to spend it on that soda pop or that double Sunday extravaganza, and see your precious savings melt away like that ice cream, or vanish like the effervescence of the drink into nothingness. But even in that tender mind, there would be a flicker of wisdom that suggests that we spend the money on something less evanescent. Years later, as we grow up, the pennies are replaced with time, and the question is, how best to spend it? Many of us still yield to the temptation of spending it on momentary pleasures, for there does seem to be a sound logic driving it. Life is but filled with many moments. Let's strive to fill each one of them with pleasure, and life itself shall indeed become pleasurable. But there's something more than this simple arithmetic when it comes to life. As Bhagwan would often call our attention to the lives of great achievers like Alexander the Great, moments that appeared well spent while they were being filled with pleasures and petty pursuits look utterly empty when looked back at later. What then should we do with time? If time is the premium we can spend and life is the bank account that dispenses it without letting us know how much more we have, how should our prudence express itself? We could answer this question only if we know what this life is meant for after all. This precisely is what Swami's message is all about. Through his words, he constantly educates and guides, cajoles and cautions, appeals and admonishes, hints and exhorts, all the time reminding us of the purpose, pointing to the path and filling us with faith in ourselves so we may sanctify our time. Especially when it came to his students and the youth in general, the importance of time and the need to lead a purposeful life would be a strong recurring theme. Apart from counseling them personally while spending enormous amounts of time with the students, when physically away, Swami would write letters to them reminding them about his instructions. Swami also used it as a sweet means to keep the students focused on their beloved Swami even during times when he was physically away. As we step into this new year, why not revisit one of those timeless yet timely messages? In a letter that brought with it Bhagwan's New Year blessings, there was also a message as to what are the aspirations that can guide us to lead a purposeful life. And here is the letter that Swami had written. Accept my blessings. On this first day of January, blessings to you for a long, healthy, happy, peaceful, comfortable life with the experience of spiritual bliss. All of you should grow into ideal persons. New Year blessings and drops of love. All the boys must study well and cultivate discipline, humility and obedience. A life devoid of divine grace is verily no life at all. A birth wherein the love of God is not secured is really no birth at all. Therefore, take to the path of spirituality. Undertake the necessary sadhana and become worthy recipients of Sai's love and grace. Education merely for a living is like chaff without the grain. This is also not education in the true sense of the term. Practice Sai's ideals and experience Atmananda, love and blessings to all. With love, Baba, dated 1st Jan 1981. A goal or a purpose to life can define the present. So can it present the past in a new light that we may discern the hidden hints it offers. Oftentimes, the lack of a vision or a trivial goal leads us to fill our lives with empty pursuits and trinkets. That is why Swami in the letter above exhorts us to strive for God's love and grace. Fixing these as our goal will in turn lead us to sanctifying our time. What could be a more endearing goal than Bhagwan himself? As those who have tasted that love, the world and all the glitz it can offer must appear insipid to us, isn't it? Most of us have been led to Swami by the strong desire to secure our happiness in the world. In Bhagwan we found an all-encompassing insurance for life, wealth and well-being, for ourselves and those who claim as ours. In other words, putting it crassly, we tried to use Swami to accomplish the world. But now, can we make a conscious effort to utilize all that is in our disposition to win God's love? In other words, can we now use the world and our time in it to achieve God? Wouldn't that be a perfect resolution for this new year? The beginning of a new year is also characterized by a greeting to each other, wishing the year will be a happy one for all of us. And when we look deeply, we realize happiness too is a word as mystical as life itself. Little things filled us with happiness when we were children. We would love to have that childhood happiness back, but we don't seek the same things in search of that happiness that we sought when we were children. For we know that the happiness was never in those little objects and gifts. Yet, we don't stop seeking a happiness in objects outside. Our little toys are replaced by bigger ones as we grow. Swami would often remind us, true happiness is to be found in union with God alone. It is little surprise then that Swami chose to reiterate this very lesson on a New Year's Day, when we boisterously wish each other a Happy New Year. In this loving letter that Swami wrote to his students more than 40 years ago, he prods them to seek happiness that's permanent by nature. Swami writes, "Dear boys, wish you a happy and peaceful New Year. What is the happiest day in our life? All are happy days to a person of true knowledge. Happiness is an internal conscious experience which comes as an effect of the extinction of mental or physical desire. The lesser the desire, the greater is the happiness. So that perfect happiness consists in the destruction or satisfaction of all desires in the absolute being. Life is an experience meant to train the individual for a higher, deeper an expanded state of existence through the experience of the results of action. The aim of everybody's life is the attainment of complete perfection in the spiritual absolute. Prema is not an illusion. It is a reality, an actuality for those who have realized oneness in life. What is man's dearest possession apart from his life? One's dearest possession is one's own true self, and there is no permanently dear thing apart from that. God is great. All others are mere dust. God only is real and great. Everything else is unreal and valueless. I go further to say that God only exists. There is nothing second to Sai. With blessings, Baba, dated 1st January 1974. There is nothing second to Sai. There is nothing second to Sai. A statement to be carved in gold and enshrined in each one of our hearts, isn't it? A statement that if we could make the signpost of our lives, moral choices would no more be dilemmas, and leading a noble life of service to others would become second nature to us. Our lives change drastically when certain individuals or elements enter our life. For instance, a newborn in the house causes immense change with all reorienting their lives around the needs of the new member. Even a new job tends to modify our daily schedule. Is it too much to expect that when Swami steps into our lives, the way we live must change completely? Shouldn't all our priorities, decisions, definitions, and even fears reorient themselves? As long as that doesn't happen, we are not optimizing this blessing that has come our way. The goal for each of us may be far or near. The goal of attaining the complete perfection in the spiritual absolute, as Swami put it in that letter. But it is in us to ensure that we take every step forward with conviction and a sense of purpose towards that goal. When firmly on the path and when our focus is undeterred, reaching the goal is but a matter of time. And what is time for the master of time? He chooses the length of the path. He chooses the time it would take to reach the goal. All that we need to offer him is earnestness or Shraddha. Time is a toy in the hands of the Lord, and time cannot threaten the heart filled with love for him. Let us but fix him as our goal. Let us take every step dauntlessly towards him. Milestones of time may come and go, but we know that the goal could be just around any corner. As we begin this new year with renewed energy to walk towards the goal, that one goal worthy of lifetimes of effort, let us drink in this one last letter where Swami inspires and encourages us. There is no difference between his love and the truth. There is no difference between liberation and being one with him. Swami, please hold our hands and lead us unto you. Swami writes, "My dears, the time will come when the whole of this dream will vanish. To every one of us, there must come a time when the whole universe will be found to have been a mere dream, when we shall find that the soul is infinitely better than its surroundings. In the struggle through what we call environments, there will come a time when we shall find that these environments were almost zero in comparison with the power of the soul. It is only a question of time, and time is nothing in the infinite. It is a drop in the ocean. We can afford to wait and be calm. With blessings, Baba." So that, dear listeners, was the article and the letters that I wanted to read for you. And as we conclude this year, I think that's the most beautiful thing we can do. Remind ourselves of Swami's encouragement, his love, his direction. As Swami said, keep your goal as that absolute. Keep your goal as God's love and grace. Automatically, every step that you take will be in the right direction. Every decision that you make will be made with that considered knowledge, with that considered wisdom. I think that one resolution we can take, how much more strongly we are going to walk on this path, how much more focused we are going to be on this goal of earning Swami's love and grace. If we were to make that resolution, I am sure we all will be progressing in the right direction, making choices that are right and doing the right things. So that, dear listeners, brings me to the end of this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth and the last Radio Sai Answering Booth of 2017. So here is wishing all of you a very, very happy new year, a prosperous new year, a purposeful new year, and a new year filled with Swami's love and grace. I'm going to leave you with a very, very beautiful song, a song which was sung as part of the drama, and on the other side of the song, you'll have Brother Bishu joining you all for the last segment of today, the Vahini Satsang, and the last segment, last live segment of this year. So Bishu will be here to do the honors for that. Do you have a question on practical spirituality that you would like that we feature on this program and answer for you? Feel free to write to me. I invite questions to my personal mail ID. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. Feel free to write to me. And if you wish to be anonymous, do let me know. I will not mention your name. If you can send your question in your own voice, that would be beautiful, because I always love to play somebody else's voice on the show too. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet, and I thank each one of you for joining me today and joining me throughout all the episodes that we have featured through the year. And as we meet you next year, do join us again and keep us in your prayers and keep giving us the love and encouragement that you've always given us. Thank you. I'm going to leave you with this beautiful, again, one of my favorite songs, and I'm sure you will enjoy it too. Happy listening.
ये समय का पहिया चलता ही जाए, तेरी प्रगति ही पहचान रे, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, ऊपर वाला साथी जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, तू क्या लाया, क्या है तेरा, दौलत आंखों का अंधेरा, मन की तृष्णा दूर न जाए, मन की तृष्णा दूर न जाए, लोभ की गठरी भरती जाए, लोभ की गठरी भरती जाए, खाली हाथ सभी को जाना, खाली हाथ सभी को जाना, तू कितना भी धनवान रे, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, जीवन बादल की छाया सा उड़ जाए। मिट जाए कठिन ये अवसर तूने पाया कठिन ये अवसर तूने पाया क्यों बनता तू अनजान रे चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा इंसान चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा मेला है जग का